Now, the Federal Drive with Tom Temin and Emily Kopp.
Good morning on this Friday, January 31st, 2014 at 9:08. And we welcome you to the special Federal Drive live panel discussion, the National Infrastructure Protection Plan. I'm Tom Temin. Our executive editor, Jason Miller, is joining me this hour. Our producers are Lauren Larson and Sierra Crawford. Our web editor is Shefali Kapadia. Now, the idea of a federal-private industry partnership to protect critical infrastructure goes back several years, but the Homeland Security Department has recently updated the plan known as the NIP, the National Infrastructure Protection Plan. Federal agencies and private sector critical infrastructure operators have a sharper sense of what they've got to do. Events like the Target cyber breach and some deadly train derailments show how bad things can get when critical infrastructure is harmed or fails in some way. This morning, we're going to take a close look at the latest version of the NIP, how industry is reacting, and what happens next. We have four special guests joining us in studio this morning. Bob Kolaski is Director for Strategy and Policy at the Office of Infrastructure Protection at the Homeland Security Department. Ernie Edgar is the General Counsel at Atkins International and Chairman of the Infrastructure Security Partnership Board. William Anderson is Director and Chief Operating Officer of that partnership. And Carrie Thomas, Senior Director of Homeland Security Programs at ABS Consulting. We're going to welcome them in just a moment, but first here is Jason Miller.
Thank you, Tom. Now, this is a very exciting time because not only did we put this panel together and we got some people from industry, we have people from we have a representative from Homeland Security Department, but I know from reporting on the National Infrastructure Protection Plan that industry is not necessarily always very happy with it. I talked to two separate people at separate times, and they've come back and said, we didn't feel like this was the best collaboration that we could get. So I think this panel in many ways is going to help answer some of those questions about, okay, what happened? Why is that perception still there? Is that a fair perception? And I think that's what some of the questions we are going to address today. But let's start with some basics. The National Infrastructure Protection Plan, for the audience who's maybe not familiar with what the NIP is, let me turn to Bob from DHS. Give us a sense. What is the National Infrastructure Protection Plan? Why did you guys just recently update it?
Sure. Thanks, Jason. Thanks for having me. The National Infrastructure Protection Plan guides the national efforts to work together as a public-private community to secure and make resilient critical infrastructure. Critical infrastructure, as you know, are the essential services and functions that help our economy and our society operate: electricity, power, other forms of power, water, transportation. The NIP is the guiding document across a public-private partnership of what how we are going to make progress towards security and resilience. We went through the process of updating it at the request of the president, or the order of the president, through Presidential Policy Directive number 21, which he released last February, which he released simultaneously to an executive order on cybersecurity for critical infrastructure. And in that, he called for a new plan that adopts to the emerging and changing risk environment, what we've learned in working with the private sector over the last 10 years, some changes in the operations of infrastructure, and some changes in policy, including national preparedness policy.
It's interesting. Everything is starting to come to fruition now. Here we are a year later after the executive order and the PPD was released. I just did a story with Phyllis Schneck, one of your coworkers over at the Homeland Security Department, around the new voluntary cyber plan. But to be clear, around the Infrastructure Protection Plan, this is not a cyber document. This is a full risk management document.
Yes. One of the key premises of PPD 21 and the work we've done over the last year is that cybersecurity should be dealt with in the context of overall enterprise risk management. As we work with our private partners and talk to boards and C-level folks, they talk about making cybersecurity decisions in the context of other decisions they have to make related to security. Our approach within the DHS to infrastructure protection means bringing cyber into all hazards protection, but the NIP itself deals with not only cybersecurity, but the threats of extreme weather, pandemics, you know, the terrorism risk and things like that.
All right, Ernie, the General Counsel of Atkins International and Chairman of the Infrastructure Security Partnership Board. First of all, tell us about the board and what the reaction is among your members and what you're seeing in the NIP that's important.
Sure, and thanks also for having me as well. A little bit about TISP itself. It's an organization of organizations, and it was formed immediately after the 9/11 attacks based on the realization that, at least at that time, we perceived the built environment, our cities, where our communities are, as, frankly, the new battlefield in the war on terror. Fortunately, that's not proven necessarily to be the case, but what's evolved out of that thought process is concepts of resilience and critical infrastructure, not just to man-made threats, but to the natural disaster threats that we face every day. And so as a result, a lot of our discussion has been about how do we make our infrastructure more resilient? How do we make our communities more resilient? We see in events like Katrina, for example, the tie-in or interdependencies between different infrastructure sectors and how a failure in one geographic region of the country can impact the economy elsewhere. And so that's really been a lot of our discussion, our thought. And so when we look at the NIP is really an evolution of that thought. It's the third version, I believe, now, and it's going to continue to evolve. And so the role that TISP played in this draft was to bring the voice of industry and, frankly, our contacts with state and local government to the federal piece, the folks that were writing it, and give them those perspectives. I think that's really been the quantum leap, in that regard. One is the voice of state and local government is much more present in the NIP than in previous drafts, I think it's fair to say. And also, more and more of the groundwork is being laid for more of a partnership with private industry. And, you know, it sounds simple, but that's really difficult to achieve as we go forward.
And, Bill, as the director, COO of the TISP, how do you get what do you tell people of these other organizations that join? What's important? How do you get them convinced that they need to be part of this so that they can have some influence on the NIP and also make sure they're doing it right?
Well, on a regular basis, we work with our board of directors. We also work with our committees. We run some roundtables on specific topics that are focused on the built environment. And we basically do a survey to find out what are the basic issues that are happening at this time. And we also look at what are some of the solution sets that are out there. And then we bring that information out forward to the wider audience that listens in. We do have a newsletter and a LinkedIn group and several ways that we communicate with our members on a regular basis so we can send that information out to find out who's interested in those particular topics. And then we put together project teams and work groups that work on specifically those tasks. And that's basically how we worked with the National Infrastructure Protection Plan. Back in April 2013, I got a call from Kerry Thomas while I was at the West Point running our critical infrastructure symposium. And he said that he heard from Bob Kolaski about this open environment that they're trying to create on the revision of the National Infrastructure Protection Plan. And he's been inviting TISP to come to the table for a discussion on that and whether or not we were interested. So that's how that ball started rolling with this particular process. And I did exactly what I said. I went back out to our committees. I went back out to our board members, our roundtables, asked whether or not this is an interest area. And we pulled together a nice working group team. And we contacted Bob Kolaski and said, this is what we'd like to do. And we started working with them directly on the revision of the NIP. And it was a great process. We submitted 7 specific comments. We didn't get all of those things added into the NIP, but everything that we got in there, it's a wonderful document, and it really pushes the ball forward for the National Infrastructure Protection Plan, knowing that it is a living document and will go through many revisions in the future.
Let me turn to Kerry Thomas, Senior Director of Homeland Security at ABS Consulting. Is the biggest difference with the National Infrastructure Protection Plan this time around the focus on risk? Or as Bill was saying, the inclusion of state and local, the broader inclusion maybe of industry in some regards, where do you see the biggest change?
You know, I think it's all of those things. Having had the opportunity in various past lives to contribute to all three versions of the National Infrastructure Protection Plan, it has gone through a maturation process, and I think this version goes a long way to addressing many of those things that you were just talking about. And to truly assess, you know, regional risk and resilience, you have to bring all those things together. You have to bring industry together. You have to bring the owners and operators of critical infrastructure together. You have to consider the communities. These things all coexist together. They're not, you know, independent of each other.
And how would you characterize the NIP? I mean, does it put burden equally on government and industry? Maybe different jobs, but everyone's got a role to play here, not just industry.
Sure. I mean, the challenge with critical infrastructure protection in this country, at least, is so much of that infrastructure is not owned by a government agency. And so there do have to be partnerships. You can address it through regulatory frameworks, through grant programs, but then there's this third leg of the stool that really is very important, which are public-private partnerships. And that's really where the NIP cuts its teeth.
Let me jump to Bob.
Sure. To address your question a little more, I mean, one of the key concepts of the new NIP is the notion of comparative advantage, and that the public sector and the private sector and local governments and federal governments have different things that they bring to the table. And let's take advantage of that. Let's not try to replicate. Let's let the private sector do what they're good at. For example, innovation. For example, driving market solutions in cybersecurity. And the government should support that and step away. And let's let the federal government do what it's good at, which is, you know, to help address catastrophes and to share information and things like that. And that's a key thing. Comparative advantage based on a value proposition of working together.
One of the criticisms, if you will, of the National Infrastructure Protection Plan has been that, yes, DHS reached out quite a bit, 30-odd meetings. There was a lot of input, a lot of industry comment. And then there was a feeling among some, and obviously I think you guys have been very clear saying you feel like they listened, but some others didn't listen. They feel like DHS didn't listen very well. I'm not going to put Bob on the spot because maybe that's not fair, but I will turn to Bill, so I'll put you on the spot. Is that a fair criticism? I mean, you're never going to get everything, but do you feel like from industry's perspective, you got a lot of something? You've got a fair amount?
Well, when you start looking at what we had done, we made the effort to sit down and speak with our federal partners, not just with the Office of Infrastructure Protection, but with the Corps of Engineers, with the Department of Transportation, with many others, start asking these particular types of questions. We went the extra steps. We went the extra miles to make sure that they understood what we were submitting as comments, and we got an understanding or a response back to reasons why they would not be fit for this version of the National Infrastructure Protection Plan. Now, we understood that that was what was happening, and many of the items that we had pushed forward, for example, like a consistent approach or a baseline approach for being able to do risk analysis at a regional basis, that may not be possible through the National Infrastructure Protection Plan currently, but we could work with many of the public-private partnerships around the nation right now who are on our board, who do participate in a lot of our events, and see what can be done in those particular areas. There is an interest to head in this direction, but it may not be necessary that we include it as a federal process at this point. And I think there is a need for some demonstration of that working.
All right. We will take a break here. You're listening to a special live Federal Drive discussion, the National Infrastructure Protection Plan. Our guests today are Bob Kalansky, Director of Strategy and Policy at the Office of Infrastructure Protection at the Homeland Security Department, Bernie Edgar, General Counsel at Atkins International and Chairman of the Infrastructure Security Partnership Board, Bill Anderson, Director and COO of that partnership, TISP, and Kerry Thomas, Senior Director of Homeland Security Programs at ABS Consulting. This is Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. We'll be back after this short break. 9:24, welcome back to the Federal Drive with Tom Temin and Emily Kopp, federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. You're joining us for a special Federal Drive discussion, the National Infrastructure Protection Plan. I'm Tom Temin. My special guest this morning is Jason Miller. And our industry guests in studio with us this morning are Bob Kalansky, Director for Strategy and Policy in the Office of Infrastructure Protection at the Homeland Security Department, Ernie Edgar, General Counsel at Atkins International and Chairman of the Infrastructure Security Partnership Board, the TISP, Bill Anderson, Director and COO of the TISP, and Kerry Thomas, Senior Director of Homeland Security Programs at ABS Consulting. Jason Miller.
Before break, we were talking a little bit about some of the criticisms of the National Infrastructure Protection Plan, at least the draft version. And Ernie, you were just about to jump in right before Tom took us to break. Give me a sense of what you're seeing, what you're hearing, and the response to maybe some of those criticisms.
Yeah, I think with the NIP, there are a couple things to keep in mind. First is, yes, it's a federal document, but it's not the only initiative. Okay, the federal government is doing playing its role with DHS in the NIP, but then state and local communities and governments are working together with their private sector residents, if you will, and developing regional partnerships. So both efforts are working together from opposite ends of the spectrum and coming together. And I think really when we look at where we go from here, and we'll talk about what's in the NIP here in a moment, it's about taking that plan and putting it into action at all levels of the country. Communities are not segmented by government and private sector. I mean, we all work together, we all live together, and that's really where in operationalizing this, we'll see a lot of these concepts come together. And some of those criticisms will probably fall away because in putting these plans into action, those efforts will be realized.
Bob, it's Bob, it sounds like to me that what Ernie's saying is the devil's going to be in the details, is that don't judge the book by its cover. Do you feel like that's a fair assessment?
I'm happy for people to judge this book by its cover and what's in the book. But to Ernie's point, you know, let's wait till the story's been told in further implementation. I do want to just, you know, add on, Jason, to a little of what you were asking about earlier. In addition to our good partners and folks like TISP who represent the organizations that we've been talking about, we had other avenues of reaching the private sector. We have 16 sector coordinating councils that organize private sector critical infrastructure sector's representatives. We worked very closely with the sector coordinating councils. We work closely with information sharing and analysis centers, which represent private sector information sharing interests. And we work with other regional coalitions to get to what Ernie's talking about, regional groups of private sector groups who are around the country who come together and work on security and resilience in their communities. So it was a multi-pronged way of which we engage with the private sector, and I think that was important. And you come up with differences of opinion. We thought through the process. We addressed, you know, we responded to all the differences of opinion. Did we make everyone satisfied and everything? I'm not sure, but I think we made most people satisfied most of the time.
Well, you know, not everyone can be satisfied. I think that's the challenge that everybody, and especially government, faces. And I know you guys were not criticized for having for the reach out. I mean, I think people were very happy with how much effort DHS and others made to talk to the private sector, to reach out to the private sector, to get their input. I think there's some who say, well, at the end, well, what did that matter? Because it seemed like they didn't listen. Fair or not, that the perception is something obviously we're dealing with. But let's talk about what's actually in the National Infrastructure Protection Plan. I'll turn back to Bob a little bit. This is broken down how and their sectors, meaning electricity, water, banking, et cetera. Walk us through it a little bit.
Sure. The National Infrastructure Protection Plan starts with a set of goals to promote critical infrastructure security and resilience. The goals relate to sharing information, doing better analysis on the risks to critical infrastructure, producing secure infrastructure, resilient infrastructure, and learning lessons. Through the NIP, we then call for – I think the key thing for people to look at in the NIP is the call to action. There are 12 specific items that will guide national effort over the next 4 years. They include jointly setting national priorities, doing sector-specific planning across all 16 critical infrastructure sectors, and making dedicated progress on specific items related to information sharing and managing risk and learning lessons and measuring outcomes.
And is it safe to say that for each of those sectors, they really have two pieces of the cyber piece, one of the protection piece, I should say. One is the protection of the thing itself. So, for example, if it's water, to make sure nobody dumps poison in there. And also everybody has cyber. So that's a part of everybody's that cuts across all of the sectors?
Yeah, I think that's a true statement. I wouldn't put it quite as stark. I mean, we have seen increasingly, and one of the factors into the new NIP is increasingly a cyber-physical convergence, so that things that happen in cyber systems or in the virtual world can have physical impacts. And again, we can't separate those two in our planning, in our risk management, in our information sharing.
So cyber itself is really a couple of things. One, it's protection of data in systems, and it's also protecting that, you know, there's the famous video of a generator and all that.
The Aurora.
Yeah, making sure that doesn't happen. Okay.
DHS was not happy with that one, by the way.
No. We're putting this guy on the spot this morning.
I'm just saying. I do want to talk about the sector. There's a government role. There's an industry role. Let me turn to Bill for a second. Bill, where do you see the two roles converging? Is it industry with government help? Is it government with industry help? How do you see that, or is it equal paths?
Well, we all have a responsibility here. I mean, if we're going to move our nation to be more resilient, which is basically what the whole plan is all about, is moving towards that direction of resilience. And by the plan, I don't mean necessarily the National Infrastructure Protection Plan. I mean a lot of the plans that already exist out there, the other FEMA framework documents that exist for response, for recovery, and so many other things that are out there right now. You already have the federal government also spending money on resilience. For transit, $3 million is being spent on that. The call for proposals is out right now for that. And you also have the Corps of Engineers looking at Hurricane Sandy and actually how can you build resilience into your infrastructure after that. So there are many things that are actually currently happening to move ourselves within a direction of resilience. That's at the federal level. You bring it down to the local level, you bring it down to the companies. Everybody has a responsibility at this and looking at how we can reshape how infrastructure is actually designed and built today, what materials actually go into that. How can you identify which materials are actually resilient for certain purposes and which ones are resilient for other purposes, which actually are not resilient at all? And these are the types of things that we're talking about today and putting it out there so we get people get a better sense of, from the built environment perspective, this is what makes us more resilient and how we can actually accomplish it. Back in 2006, we put out a regional disaster resilience guide, which helped show how many organizations can actually work together in developing an action plan. This document was then rewritten in 2011 after learning lessons from prior incidences that had occurred within Japan, here in the United States, with Katrina, for example. And we applied those lessons learned to that document. Also, we took the information that was given to us by the users of that document, like the state of Maryland, like the Corps of Engineers up in the Pacific Northwest region, and we put that information in there as well to update it and modernize it. So that still exists out there. And then you have multiple different processes being put in place by now through like the applied physics laboratories at Johns Hopkins University, through the National Institute of Building Sciences, through the CARI and regional Resilience Institute, which are developing similar types of tools so they can prove that these implementation processes for resilience actually work.
And
so,
just a detail question, when you say the state and local level and companies, would this also include, are they in the TISP too, the local governments that operate utilities and waterways, and there's a lot of local government
stuff? Absolutely. I mean, TISP as a membership, we have certainly private sector, but also state, local, federal government representatives from various agencies. So it's TISP really exists as a facilitator for all these points of view to come up with these ideas and present them out to the community, begin to foster that discussion. And the Disaster Resilience Guide that Bill was referencing earlier was really one of the first tangible efforts in putting that together. And so we've really benefited from all those perspectives, and we've been able to present those to policymakers and so when the opportunity came to work on the NIP, that was the kind of capability that we as an organization of organizations were able to bring in addition to the other avenues that Bob and his team had available to them.
I want to turn to Kerry Thomas from ABS Consulting. When you're working with clients, when you are talking to whether it's government clients or whether you're talking to commercial or local, state and local, how do you use the National Infrastructure Protection Plan as maybe a guide in principle? Give us a sense of how does that fit into what you guys do.
Sure. So a lot of the work that we do is risk related. Number one, property risk management firm in the United States. And one of the things that we do when we're dealing with, you know, owners and operators, critical infrastructure, state and local communities, you know, the NIP provides an overarching risk management construct. And you know, a lot of times we're helping these folks, you know, do what they need to do to apply for grant money effectively. You know, so we take that framework and work within that. I would say, you know, to pick up on Bill's point a moment ago about it is a partnership and it has to be a two-way street. One of the criticisms of prior versions of the NIP has been that it, you know, the federal government really took a lot of information and the state and local partners and critical infrastructure partners didn't see a lot coming back their way. I think this NIP, this version of the NIP, takes pains to really address that and explore ways to make it more of a two-way street and an effective partnership.
All right, we're going to take a break on that note and come back to this discussion in a moment. This is a special live Federal Drive discussion, the National Infrastructure Protection Plan. Our guests today are Kerry Thomas, Senior Director of Homeland Security Programs at ABS Consulting, William Bill Anderson, Director and COO of the Infrastructure Security Partnership, Ernie Edgar, General Counsel at Atkins International and Chairman of the Infrastructure Security Partnership Board, Bob Kolaski, Director for Strategy and Policy, Office of Infrastructure Programming of Protection, rather, at the Homeland Security Department. He's Jason Miller. I'm Tom Temin. You're listening to Federal News Radio 1500 AM. We'll be right back. . 9:38, this is the Federal Drive with Tom Temin and Emily Kopp, federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. And welcome back to our special live discussion, the National Infrastructure Protection Plan. I'm Tom Temin, joined in studio by Jason Miller. Our guests today are Bob Kolaski, Director for Strategy and Policy at the Office of Infrastructure Protection at the Homeland Security Department, Bill Anderson, the Director and Chief Operating Officer of the Infrastructure Security Partnership, Ernie Edgar, General Counsel at Atkins International and Chairman of the Infrastructure Security Partnership Board, and Kerry Thomas, Senior Director of Homeland Security Programs at ABS Consulting. Jason Miller.
Right before break, we started to talk about information sharing. Carrie, you brought up the fact that the difference in the National Infrastructure Protection Plan this time around, or at least the perception of it, was that this really focuses more on two-way information sharing versus maybe where in the past it was people felt like it was one-way. DHS just took all the information sharing and industry never got anything back. And I think I'm going to turn to Bob from DHS. This has been a huge, huge focus for DHS, I'd say, over the last 4 or 5 years, maybe a little longer, of creating that trust with the industries, with the sectors. Give me a sense, how does the Infrastructure Protection Plan really address that two-way information sharing?
Sure. I think the Infrastructure Protection Plan even goes further than two-way into multiple ways of information sharing, but recognizing that there needs to be a handoff. So there are a lot of key elements of how we share information about critical infrastructure risk. There are state and local fusion centers, which get information at the state and local level. There's ISACs that I mentioned, information sharing analysis centers. There are ops centers that federal governments and regional governments have. What we're trying to build through the NIP is a network to put that information together and do something with that information, get it out to the right people. Key to that are two centers within the U.S. government, within DHS, the National Infrastructure Coordinating Center, and the National Cyber Communications Integration Center. And so they have the challenge of fusing information and helping to create situational awareness. In terms of progress we've made, let me give you a specific example. We have a program within DHS where we share threats and indicators and cyber systems with private industry. We get a lot of our information from the threats and things we're seeing on federal networks where we are promoting operational roles in cybersecurity. And the private sector gives us some of the threats and indicators. When the program first started, if you put it all together, you have a better idea of what's going on in cyber systems. You can do a better job of managing vulnerabilities.
And you're talking – okay.
Yeah. When the program just started, 90%+ of the information that we were sharing came from things we were seeing on federal networks. Over the last 2 to 3 years, what we've been able to do in working with industry is the majority of the things that we're getting out and that we're sharing comes from things that are happening on private networks. It's a great example of the power of fusing information. And I would be remiss not to mention the only way, and what's very important to DHS, that it's going to work is if industry and consumers trust that privacy and civil liberties are protected in sharing that information. So we are separating the privacy and civil liberties, any concerns, from the actual technical information that's getting out to help CIOs and CISOs and ultimately boards make decisions on cybersecurity.
And really what you're talking about is the NCIC, which is you did the acronym perfectly. It's one of the hardest acronyms in government, I'll tell you. But also the Enhanced Cyber Service Security, the Enhanced Cybersecurity Services Initiative that used to be the Defense Industrial Board, Defense Industrial Base. Too many acronyms. Yeah, I don't even get the acronym caught up. Let me turn to Ernie for a second. Put on your other hat as the General Counsel at Atkins and the way the information sharing goes. Whether it's cyber or other kinds of information sharing, what are you looking for? What are you getting? What's the participation level from your company?
You know, I think we're incentivized in a little bit of a different way from the private sector in the sense that you know, you look at resilience, it's about continuity of operations, it's about supply chain management, it's about the interdependencies that our offices have in the communities in which they live. So there's sort of that inside the wire effect of making sure that our physical infrastructure is operable or we've got some sort of workaround in the event that there's a denial of service in some way. And that's fine, but then you've also got the people part, and this kind of gets us back to critical infrastructure in the sense that you're not preserving critical infrastructure for its own sake. You're preserving it because we as a community of people, our economy, we rely on it, right? So if you don't have people coming into work because there's been a denial, whether it's man-made or natural.
Or ice on the roads.
Or ice, yes, absolutely.
Not the agency, the stuff that comes down from the clouds.
Yeah. Then you're out of business for some period of time, and that has a direct impact on the bottom line. So that's the sort of planning and capability that is at a company level we're looking at. And then you get into the interdependency of what's outside of our control, and that's where you get the real information sharing, I think, piece with state, local, and then ultimately federal government at the company level. I think the amount of information that's shared and you're looking to get back is going to vary by the size of the corporation and where its interests are. So obviously small business is going to have a much more local feel than a big multinational. I hope that answers the question.
And Carrie, how comfortable are companies with the whole information sharing and their feelings that it's protected, that it stays in the family, so to speak, because that information can be used in a lot of bad ways?
Well, as I was saying, I think that the things are starting to mature around this issue. The 2013 NIP obviously just came out. There's a lot that needs to be done to realize the things that are talked about in the call to action. I think as some of those things start to take root and people start to see the fruits of that partnership, then perhaps, you know, it'd be a better time to ask that question.
I want to tag back to the beginning of the conversation and go back to Bob from DHS. One of the things that we talked about at the very beginning was how this relates back to the executive order, the presidential policy directive from February 2013. How does the National Infrastructure Protection Plan relate to the cyber framework that NIST is pointing out? I know they're different, but they call it for, they're kind of they fall under this broader perspective of critical infrastructure resilience.
Sure. As I said at the beginning, I led the task force that had the secretary's responsibilities for both the executive order and the PPD and working on the NIP. So worked very closely with NIST and my colleagues in the development of the cybersecurity framework, which will be released in mid-February. The cybersecurity framework is intended and was developed working with industry. It's intended to be something that owners and operators of critical infrastructure, including state and local governments, will adopt in a voluntary manner to raise their level of security and resilience. Thus, it is a good example of how the NIP gets operationalized, that in a voluntary context, we develop something driven by industry, taking advantage of international standards and other things that we've learned, and we in the federal government step back, provides incentives for adopting the framework, encouragement, support, but industry develops a framework that makes sense for them that then leads to higher levels of security and resilience in cyber systems.
Do you foresee other very similar implementation plans, whether it's not necessarily cyber-related, but it could be physical-related or other relations back to the national infrastructure?
Yeah, I mean, my colleagues have been talking a lot about resilience and particularly resilience in the face of extreme weather and things we're seeing related to climate change. And I think that's another area where the NIP and the NIP philosophy of voluntary partnerships, we can think about how we engage communities, state and local governments to bring data and information about the change in weather patterns and raise the level of resilience around the country. What does that mean? What can the federal government do to promote and incentivize resilience?
And, Bill, I wanted to ask you also, I hear a lot about what you have to do for cyber protection and critical infrastructure protection, and also what you have to do in terms of planning and prove that you're ready for that. So how do you handle – is there information sharing among member organizations and member companies for best practices in planning and transmitting what it is you know to convince everybody around you that you're ready to go on cyber and on critical infrastructure? You can see I have a cyber orientation here, but also in the physical protection also.
Right now we're just going out and educating industry on many of these changes, particularly as they're starting to come out through GSA and DOD. What was it, 2 days ago they had released the guidance on the procurement processes mm-hmm. for cybersecurity, particularly when you're looking at information control systems. You know, a lot of our buildings have these different systems, these different systems which run your energy, which run your water usage and ventilation. And these things are connected into information control systems when you're looking at installations for the military. And those are what is being addressed there. So we're just trying to get that information out there. What are the new standards? What are the new approaches and procedures? And hopefully we can see improvements and changes along what we've done here so far.
All right. We're going to take a break here. You are listening to a special live Federal Drive discussion, the National Infrastructure Protection Plan. Our guests today are Ernie Edgar, General Counsel at Atkins International and Chairman of the Infrastructure Security Partnership Board, Bill Anderson, Director and COO of the TISP, Kerry Thomas, Senior Director of Homeland Security Programs at ABS Consulting, and Bob Kolaski, Director for Strategy and Policy, Office of Infrastructure Protection at the Homeland Security Department. He's Jason Miller. I'm Tom Temin. You're listening to the Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. We'll be back right after this break. 9:52. Welcome back to the Federal Drive with Tom Temin and Emily Kopp, federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. And you are joining us for our special Federal Drive live discussion, the National Infrastructure Protection Plan. I'm Tom Temin. My special guest host today is Jason Miller for this hour. Our guest in studio, Ernie Edgar, General Counsel at Atkins International and Chairman of the Infrastructure Security Partnership Board, Bill Anderson, Director and COO of the TISP, Kerry Thomas, Senior Director of Homeland Security Programs at ABS Consulting, and Bob Kolaski, Director for Strategy and Policy in the Office of Infrastructure Protection at the Homeland Security Department. Jason Miller.
We've been talking a lot about what's in the protection, the National Infrastructure Protection Plan. We're talking about how it got developed. Let's look forward now a little bit. This is out now. It's been out for about a month. And what happens next? What are the next steps? How do you go from here's a plan so it doesn't become shelfware? Let me turn to Carrie since you got the last word of the first segment. You get the first word of the last segment.
Right. No, I mean, I think there are a number of paths that this thing will follow. One of the things that I'm certainly watching closely is what happens with the risk and resilience and how does that get measured going forward? While the new NIP doesn't prescribe a methodology for how to do that, it does some things that are fairly important towards creating the right climate for that to happen. Importantly, just note that significant efforts put into aligning critical infrastructure protection and resilience policy with community preparedness and resilience policy, something that's been bifurcated for a long time. I think that, in combination with recognizing the importance of measuring resiliency at a regional level and all the interdependencies that are associated with that, start to move us in a direction that I look forward to seeing how it plays out.
And just real quick, a quick follow-up on that. When you talk about measuring risk and resilience, is it, to use the word, another framework potential there? Where do you see, how do you get to that point of getting that standard or at least a baseline?
Yeah.
He's like, that's a consulting fee. That's going to be a short dollar.
I'll tell you a story. It may not answer your question, but you know, my company developed the port-wide risk management and trade resumption plans for 15 of the nation's major seaports. Methodology that was approved by the department ultimately led to how those ports invested millions of dollars. There were dozens of other ports that were required to do that as well. And at the national level, you could not aggregate, you know, what that data was telling. You could spend money very effectively that you had at your facility, but you couldn't aggregate it and make larger strategic decisions. That's something I hope we get to leveraging the climate that I think this new NIP creates.
All right, let's turn to Ernie. Where do you see this going?
Sure, and from the TIS perspective, I mean, again, we're a facilitator of a conversation. And so we have several events that are lined up over the course of the coming year. In particular, we have a critical infrastructure symposium that we've held annually for the last several years. This year it's going to be held in Colorado Springs. We have several workshop events around the country through our members' organizations, SAME posts, for example, or ASCE chapters, other locations. And then we have several roundtable discussions on relevant topics dealing with infrastructure resilience, critical infrastructure. How do we look at policy, culture, integration of the communities? And so if folks are interested in these things, I encourage you to go to our website, which is www.tisp.org, and the schedule of events and where they're located will be there.
We'll have that linked at our website also. Thank you, Jason.
All right, we'll turn to Bill quickly.
One quick thing about the Critical Infrastructure Symposium, we do have a call for papers that is out there right now, so you can find that on the website, too, if you have something that you want to address. Some other things that we're really focused on within TISP is bringing together the Public-Private Partnership Collaboration Committee, and we're looking at where we can establish new partnerships and how that actually can be done and what can they focus on. That's a huge issue for some. And another one is bringing together our folks for the Regional Infrastructure Resilience Committee, and particularly looking at how we can start more physically addressing resilience principles, resilience policy down at the state and local level, and getting that information in the hands of the companies and the agencies there.
So sounds like the work is just beginning, and we've got just about a minute and a half left. We were going to give that to Bob Kolaski of DHS.
Sure. So I can't tell you what's going to happen in the world in the next 5 to 10 years, but I can tell you it's certainly not going to get less complex.
Who's going to win the Super Bowl then?
It depends on the end kit.
I haven't put my money where my mouth is yet. So I will put my money in the fact that the world's going to get more complex. And where this is going to go, and what's really exciting about this space is this really is a new way to approaching government. It's more about governance and partnership than it is about federal drive. And we're going to continue to push the envelope on government supporting innovation and working with industry. I think the thing really to look from us working with our industry and our nonprofit partners is the national priorities we're going to set for critical infrastructure security and resilience. What are the national risk management and capability priorities? We're going to set those this summer working with the interagency, and that will drive a lot of the specific federal action where we put the NIP towards specific gaps that we need to fill as a country. Again, with the federal government, you know, part of the solution, but by no means the only part of the solution.
And will there be a NIP 3 sometime?
I have promised my family that I will not work on another NIP. No, there will not be another NIP during this administration.
That brings us to the end of this discussion. And I want to thank our guests for joining us this morning. Bob Kolaski is Director for Strategy and Policy in the Office of Infrastructure Protection. We said that word a lot this morning. At the Homeland Security Department, Ernie Edgar, General Counsel at Atkins International and Chairman of the Infrastructure Security Partnership Board. Bill Anderson, Director and COO of the TISP. Kerry Thomas, Senior Director for Homeland Security Programs at ABS Consulting, and my special guest host, Federal News Radio Executive Editor Jason Miller. You've been listening to a special live Federal Drive discussion, the National Infrastructure Protection Plan. We'll post this entire conversation at federalnewsradio.com/Federal Drive. It's 9:59. Coming up next, AFGE's Inside Government, the Office of Personnel Management Local 32 President, Charlotta McNeil, will discuss the sequestration's role in reduction in force notices being sent to OPM employees. I'm Tom Temin. Again, my thanks to Jason Miller. Join us Monday morning starting at 6 for the Federal Drive with Tom Temin and Emily Kopp here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com, your source for federal news now.
WFED Washington, WWWTFM HD2 Manassas, the Washington, D.C. home of Navy athletics. We are federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.
AB Radio.